This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no hold'em.
Hey.
So lay our cards down, 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 down.
So hello once again and welcome to I Don't Get It, the pop culture get off my long cast. The pop culture get off my long cast, no doubt. This features the open-minded musings of two late 40s curmudgeons, each who stares down the prospect, in different ways, mind you, of entertainment relevance, because everyone's journey is their own. I'm your co-host, Bill Scurry of American Caesar Enterprises, which, as everyone knows at this point, is the only local network which carries the Cincinnati Bengals home games, except in the greater Sarasota Metroplex.
What? Wait, so you're saying, other than Sarasota, where for some reason the Bengals are gods among men, it's very hard to catch games of a Cincinnati team.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think we really thought it out because it's actually easy to catch the games, but we're the only network that has a monopoly on Bengals games in Sarasota, Florida.
Oh, I see. So yeah. So if you're in Sarasota and you want to catch
there's a game, there's a local blackout. Yeah, you got to watch our network.
You're really reaching this time, man.
Well, is this, you're saying this is a bad business model?
I'm saying it's terrible. Wait, also, aren't the Bengals a good team? Like, don't they go to the Super Bowl all the time?
Wasn't that Johnny Unitas?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that Johnny Unitas?
No.
Remember the first Super Bowl I was aware of when I was like six was the 49ers versus the Bengals. That's all I remember.
Right. And
that was
Wayne Gretzky against Joe Mantegna, right?
I thought it was Wayne Gretzky versus Joe Manchin.
The
team was Joe Mantegna, Joe Manchin, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan.
Do you know who came off?
Hulk Hogan.
Who came off on the disabled list? People did not know Jean-Claude Keeley was going to like make a real hand. He was going to make a hero.
People aren't going to get that reference, dude. People
look
are not going to get that reference.
Look it up. That's all I'm going
to
say.
We are here to. We are not here to hold your hand through your educational journey, folks. My name is Noah Tarno. I'm the founder and the senior quizmaster of the big quiz thing.
We give you a Jean-Claude Killy reference. That's all I'm saying.
Jean-Claude Killy reference only. And I don't get it. The pop culture get off my lawn cast. By the way, when you first said it at the beginning, you said it so fast. It sounded like you said the get off my lung cast.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And that's going to be, it's our anti-smoking
spin-off. It's like a pleurisy cast. Yes.
Pleurisy cast. The anti-pleurisy cast.
Get off my lung cast. Oh, I like that. That sounds like a line I would say, and I feel like you've jumped on it now.
But then you repeated it and you enunciated enough that I heard lawn.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, hi, I'm Noah Tarno. All right, so here we are, and a little behind the curtain action. This week, we were going to talk about music, a topic maybe we'll get back to at some point.
Yes, don't blow it, because I do think it's going
to be I won't blow it. I'll just give you a clue. Sesame Street.
That's a good clue.
Your clue is Sesame Street. The password is Sesame Street. Anyway, wasn't Sesame Street supposed to move to HBO?
It had.
Did it?
Yeah, no, it did. Yeah.
So now you can't watch Sesame Street unless you have Max or
correct.
Whatever?
Yeah, something. Or yeah, it's really or at least the I forget if it's the past episodes go to Max, but yeah, there's some embargo.
But doesn't that defeat the whole? I thought the whole damn point of Sesame Street was that so kids who, you know, it's about kids who live in, you know, real neighborhoods and not necessarily poor, but like, you know, it's something that all kids could enjoy, no matter your economic class or race or whatever. But no, now you got to pay $15 a month and get the fancy streaming service see Elmo and Cookie Monster.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it's more complicated than that, in that it goes out on TV as such, but then the back catalog of CTW is sold to Max. That's
if you want the classics, if you want Mr. Hooper dying, you got to go to Max.
What else is there besides that?
Slimy the Worm talks to James Gandolfini. Right.
Yeah, I don't know what.
So you're saying Oscar has fiber optic Wi-Fi in his garbage can.
It's the future, the garbage can of the future. Yes.
Garbage can of the future. Well, we're all going to be living in soon. All right. So we're not doing that topic, whatever. It's not Sesame Street, but it has a Sesame Street connection. Yesterday, Bill texts me as I'm traveling out and about, plying my trade in the Midwest of these United States, and he says
out of a suitcase, selling Bibles selling globes and Bibles. Yeah,
I don't want to sell Bibles these days. Selling globes, selling dictionaries, thesauri. But you wanted to shift to an album. I believe it just came out yesterday.
Yeah, man. It was initially like dribbled out, but the big drop was this 29th of March of 2004.
But it's been talked about, and several of the songs have been issued as singles and are all over the nets of the inter and quite easy to locate on the Fi of the Spada. The new album by, we talked about her last album on the show.
Yeah.
You know her. You love her.
Cardi B.
The Queen.
Oh,
whatever nickname they say. Mrs. Sean S. Carter. Daughter. Wasn't her dad someone? Her dad was her manager, right?
Yes, it was. He was a Svengali
Shouldn't we know
tech
her dad's
manager.
Name?
Yeah, it's the guy.
And right. Former lead singer of Destiny's Child. She was in one of the Austin Powers movies, right?
Gold member, yeah.
Star of the worst Austin Powers movie, Gold member. It wasn't her fault.
Former guest of this show.
Not true. A fellow New Yorker like us once upon a time, right? They still live in New York, right?
That's a good question. I think they may be California.
They probably have five houses in New York, even if they don't live there, right? And she's originally from Houston Street.
Right? Houston Street.
Oh, sorry. Houston. Wait, is she really from Houston, Texas?
She's really from Houston. She's really from Houston.
Okay,
Texas.
I knew she was from Texas. I just thought I might be wrong about Houston. Maybe it was, you know, Amarillo or
something.
She's
from Varick. Anyway. Varick in Houston is where she's from.
She grew up at the Film Forum. We have not said her name yet. We really don't have to. But she has a new album out called Cowboy Carter. Her name, Beyoncé. Bill, tell us what we need to know about the new Beyoncé album, Cowboy Carter. Cowboy, I remember when he'd show up at Pee-wee's Playhouse with those cartoons. It was really fun. I loved him, Cowboy Carter.
Back when she was known as Lawrence, Larry Knowles. Yeah.
Another deep cut reference. All right, Bill. Cowboy Carter, new album by Beyoncé. Give us the basics.
Yeah, this is a repeat. We have had this before, the sort of repeat customer on our show.
We didn't talk about this album before. This is act two of a song cycle, album cycle.
Yeah.
And we did act one, which was called Renaissance.
That makes it sound like it's the Ring of the Nibelung is what it sounds like you're describing in terms of an act two of a cycle. But so Cowboy Carter, as Noah said, act two, Cowboy Carter. And there's a lot of lowercase i's, lowercase i's scattered. It's a little, I'm sorry, for grammar pedants, it's a little difficult to deal with this.
The opening track is not American Requiem, but American Requiem.
Yeah, it's a little bit. Eighth studio album by Beyoncé Knowles Carter, Ice Spice, Eisenhower, whatever her name is at the moment. So it was released on, as Noah said, March 29, which is yesterday as of date of record, is the album, second consecutive installment of this trilogy project, which was conceived during the COVID-19 pandemic. And who know any of this? I believe this is like, some of this is like brand new information to us, unless I just wasn't paying attention before. The previous topic being Renaissance, or Rinascento, as the Italians call it, which came out in 2022. It's accurately described as a country album. It's accurately described as cut. Go with me here. Cowboy Carter contains blues, soul, rock, R&B, and a heavy dose of folk music on top of everything
else. Thank you. Yeah. I'm not saying there isn't country in this, and I think that first country, you know, that first single, Texas Hold'em, is absolutely a country song.
But
I think it's a stretch to call this a country album.
All the key art is her wearing denim chaps with a denim
so therefore G-string. It's a country album. Right. Okay.
Yeah, right. So I don't
That's
recall.
Why Madonna was embracing country when she wore a cowboy hat for 10 minutes.
I don't recall like the new folk singers wearing a denim G-string on the cover of their album along the way. But so the concept of the album is a broadcast by a fictional radio station in Texas. And as you probably already know by now, country singers Dolly Parton, Linda Martell, who was apparently an African-American trailblazer back in the day that
I had not heard of.
Yeah, a lot of Caucasians such as us have not heard about until I was reading the back matter on this stuff. Willie Nelson, I have heard. William J. Nelson Goldstein. You better know as Willie Nelson. They're acting as radio DJs in interstitials, which kind of like brings back the idea of Dr. Dre's album, like The Chronic, which was had a lot of like interstitial stuff along the way. That was kind of the value added bonuses between
albums. A lot of albums do that. I mean, The Who Sellout did that in the 60s, which by the way, very, very different from this album, but The Who Sellout is an amazing one.
So this album features collaborations with other African-American country artists, probably not well known, especially to people such as myself. Guys like Tanner Adel, a woman named Brittany Spencer, a woman named Tira Kennedy, someone named Raina Roberts, someone named Shaboozy, and Willie Jones, alongside collaborations with established people like Stevie Wonder, Nile Rodgers, and John Batiste, who is...
Wait, slow down. Stevie Wonder? I didn't read that.
Apparently, yeah. He's somewhere in the back. I don't know, it's a producer or maybe keyboard lines.
Oh, but yes, I wasn't aware of that. No, well, there's a prominent duet with Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, that one. Yeah,
one with Post, which my favorite song on the album. A duet with Post Malone. I mean, she's not shying away from star power.
Traditional country icons like Post Malone, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
So you are already familiar with the lead singles Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages, because those were dropped out way in advance. They created a sort of an atomic bomb crater of awareness. They were released at Great Hub up just a few weeks ago. And Cowboy Carter has been praised by critics for Beyoncé's embrace of country music in the context of celebrating the genre's black roots. So publications like the New York Times had already, and I made sure to get back, I missed this when it came out, but I read this one about, they said that, you know, the cultural discourse on black musicians' place in country music is changing. It's expanding that idea of who was sort of allowed in the country, who was allowed in the club, what radio play would make room for. These are things that are sort of like, you're going to watch this being tested in the next few days. Again, neither of us actually listen to country music, so it's kind of an open-ended discussion. We won't necessarily bump into that per se. But the album boosted the listenership of black country artists on streaming platforms and country radio, while also significantly increasing the popularity of Western wear and culture. Another side effect of Beyoncé's gigantic magic wand, which I think you would pick up if you would look on Twitter, Insta, TikTok, as a lot of enthusiastic young women of color have talked about buying boots and chaps and fringes and such things to accompany.
Slow down. So you said this album has boosted young black women buying country wear. Now, the album came out yesterday.
No, but yeah.
So we're talking about the songs. So already in the few weeks since she released Texas Hold'em, which I think was the first single. So you're saying if you go on social media, just the trend of the last few weeks. Okay, I'm just being clear about this. Yeah, okay, I was confused for a second. I mean, at first I'm like, how would we know? But because social media.
So this is why you put singles out before something comes out.
Well,
so.
that's not a new thing.
Yeah. Anyway, in case this needs any kind of backgrounding, Beyoncé did grow up in Houston, Texas. We're talking about this. This is a city with cowboy country, Zydeco influences, heavy African-American culture, population, etc. She listened to country. She self-attested to this. She listened to country at a young age, attended the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo every year, and she even performed at the Houston Rodeo four times between 2001 and 2007. That's what
so like
says.
With Destiny's Child, or I she was still with Destiny. When did she go solo?
Well, I think she zipped out and did her own thing while she was Destiny's Child. You know, Destiny's Child was a backing band for her, so I think that her dad, right. Mr. Knowles, found a way to like
Mr.
make sure
Knowles.
she had.
And her sister was Solange Knowles is her sister, right?
Yeah, she was never Destiny. She had her own thing going.
She was the Andy Gibb. She was the Andy Gibb, Bee Gees.
Andy Gibb had a moment, though. Andy Gibb was a pop singer in his own right. But yes, you're right. Exactly.
Well, my point is he wasn't in the Bee Gees, but he was the brother of the Bee Gees.
Correct.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, the other thing is that it's sort of like a little bit of a tracer bullet. Daddy Lessons came out in 2016. That was a country.
That's a song. That's a song.
Yeah, it was a country song on Lemonade, which I know I kind of balked at wondering, what is this shit that she put out? It was a bona fide shit kicker country song on Lemonade, and it kind of, you know, it performed really well. She did this with the Chicks, formerly known as Dixie, as of.
Why didn't they just change their name? The Chicks sounds terrible. I get it why they wanted to take out Dixie. Fair enough, makes sense. But the Chicks is an awful name.
Maybe so. I don't know. Hey, you know what? You won in the end.
I'm going to take my criticism. They have they've sold 8 zillion records.
Here's the thing. I didn't realize this. They performed Daddy Lessons. All of them, it was the 50th annual the CMA. What is it? Yes, the CMA Awards in 2016.
Yes, and the CMA Awards. Before you go to the CMA Awards, make sure you stop by the ATM machine. Oh, no. Wait, maybe I'm wrong. I'm sorry. Is it the Country Music Association Awards?
Oh, yeah, yeah. CMA? Okay, so the CMAA Awards.
Wait, no, let's find out. No, I make this joke and then I undermine my joke.
Country Music Association.
Ah, so then my joke is wrong. Never mind.
No, I still like it.
The CMA Awards is fine. Say it all you want. Okay.
Yeah, and so the problem with this is that, all right, so critics, all your egghead critics were the ones who praised it. So this is great. But the thing is that the backlash of country fans, like, had people saying all this shit about, oh, this isn't exactly country, and this is, you know, they start to bring out the NFL rule book of what was in bounds by, you know, a series of inches, et cetera, et cetera.
So yes, I'm not racist. I'm just following the rules.
I didn't realize this. The CMA actually deleted all promotional posts about Beyoncé's performance because they were trying to, like, it seemed like they succumbed to the pressure of fans to, like, maintain this orthodoxy because it was just too much of a threat. So that's why it's like this album is setting up this thing that they already established in 2016. Beyoncé's coming in here. And I was reading, Ben Cesario's review in The Times, which came out, I guess, early yesterday. They made the mistake of leaving the comments open. And even the pointy head people who subscribe to New York Times could not refrain from some veiled, what obviously seemed like some veiled racism about, like, gatekeeping about country music. These are people, it looked like the bylines in the comments were Albany, Sacramento, Miami, Long Island, Manhattan, so on and so forth.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly.
Jesus, man. Like, who? I mean, fine. If you're a country fan, I get why you care. It's country, but it's music, it's culture.
Just
everything's
let it
porous.
Fucking do it anyway. So,
and by the way, you said they hit it, but I found a clip of the awards of Beyonce singing.
I think they just scrubbed it off their own. You know, they're out there, but they just scrubbed off their own feed. So, what did you make of Cowpick Carter?
So, I listened to this album a couple times. I want to call out a quote. It relates to that. It's something Beyoncé said in the aftermath of that performance with The Chicks. She said, quote, "The criticisms I faced when I first entered this genre forced me to propel past the limitations that were put on me. Act two, Cowboy Carter, is a result of challenging myself and taking my time to bend and blend the genres together to create this body of work." So that gets at why I don't really see this as a country album. I see this as a polymath pop album with heavy country influences
and exercise of the artist.
Yes, there's a lot of genres in here, and country is perhaps the predominant genre. You know, this is standard Beyoncé to my way of thinking, which is she's super talented. She's got the it factor. She is a musical polymath. I mean, she knows as well as anyone who's out there now how to blend and reblend and recontextualize musical genres. I mean, you want to put her up there with people like the Beatles and Michael Jackson and Prince, people who could take every type of pop music, put it in a blender, and somehow come up with something that is hugely commercially sellable, you know, and then know how to sell it, right? And have the star power to sell it. I would not argue with that. She deserves that. I am no country expert. I like some old country, but I'm not a big, big fan. I like Johnny Cash and stuff like that. But to my ear, this is not the whole album, but a lot of it is absolutely credibly country music. It's got the stomping rhythms. It's got the fiddle accompaniment. It's even got, you know, so much of the indicators of country are like talking about my blue jeans, my boots and the beer and all that. But, you know, most of it is
bottle of whiskey.
Kind of weak sauce. It's like grafted onto I'm a rich guy from a big oil city that's just highways with mini malls on the side of it, as much of the South is now. So, you know, it's all there. But again, standard Beyoncé, it doesn't speak to me. And as a result, it comes off to me as sounding pretentious. I mean, whatever. If someone's going to be pretentious, Beyoncé can be pretentious. She's beautiful. She's worshipped. She's famous. As I said, she's hugely talented.
25 years into this career. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but the pretension turns me. It's great music. It's so not for me. And as a result, it comes off sounding pretentious. And she's got these big, bold ambitions here, you know, as I think indicated by that quote I read. And I think she overshoots her skis a little bit, if that's a metaphor that makes sense. I mean, look, I'll say that her ambition overstrips her intellect or her curiosity, but I see how that can come off condescending. I'm not the audience and I don't know country that well. I don't know the intersection of country and black culture, which clearly is there, but having never heard of Linda Martell, you know, I guess I'm no expert. And I don't know Beyonce's career that well. So I'll just say this comes off as pretentious to me. I'll give you an example, right? That first song, American Requiem, you know, she's kind of leading into it. And even I read something like that's even referencing the chicks thing, but she keeps like, it's supposed to be this deep thing about my place in music, my place in genre, being seen, being watched. But she just repeats the same things over and over and over again, the same lyrics over and over and over again, which is a hallmark of dance music and of mainstream pop music, which is what her early songs are about and a band like Destiny's Child is about. It's not supposed to be deep. That's fine. But I think she's framing herself as deep, and whether by design or just by lacking, you know, not having worked that muscle so far, I don't think she reaches the level of deep. And that makes a huge concept album that supposedly says something big about culture and race and genre and history, it makes it come off as kind of pretentious. Adding to the pretension factor, this album is very long. It's 27 tracks. I mean, several of them are these little interstitial things, 1 minute tracks, but it's a long fucking album. It is overlong. There's the song Daughter that at first I thought she was talking about her daughter, but she's referring to herself as a daughter. She literally sings a quote from an opera in Italian part of it. And look, she's got the pipes to pull that off. As far as I can tell, her Italian accent is good, but it just really strikes me as pretentious. The thing that bothers me most about this album, though, and I guess this is pretentious too, is she has a few covers. She covers Black Bird by the Beatles, although her version is titled Black Bird with the two eyes. And it's good. Black Bird, I love Black Bird. It's a great Beatles song. It's odd. It literally sounds, I mean, her voice obviously is different from, you know, Paul McCartney's, but the backing track sounds the same. It's almost like she's doing karaoke, but it's beautiful. And then she covers Jolene by Dolly Parton, and Dolly Parton shows up on the album elsewhere. She changes the lyrics to Jolene.
Yeah, she rewrites them. Yeah.
If you know Jolene, Jolene is one of these songs. It's not a favorite of mine, but it adheres to a certain philosophy a lot of pop music that I like, which is, you know, I said it before, pop music, it's not that deep. It's supposed to be fun, all that. Yes, yes, yes. But I really appreciate and enjoy when a straight between the eyes pop song is about something that few other pop songs are about, where it talks about something relatable without being the same thing every, I'm in love or I'm lonely or whatever. Jolene was one of those songs. Jolene, the story of Jolene is the narrator, the woman, is begging Jolene, who's this beautiful, charming, impossible to resist woman, please don't take my man. And she's basically admitting, like, you are hotter than me, and if you set your sights on my man, I am helpless to stop you. So she's basically begging this beautiful, glorious, irresistible woman. What a unique idea, and something that's probably happened a lot. Beyonce changes the lyrics to yet another example, which is way too much in R&B and hip hop to my ear, of bragging about how awesome you are. And she basically says, Jolene, I know I'm a queen. Jolene, I'm still a Creole banji bitch from Louisiana. Don't try me. Again, how many fucking more R&B and hip hop songs do we need that are about bragging about how awesome you are? She removes the vulnerability from the song. And while it's still a lovely song and she gives a great performance because Beyonce has a great voice and is a great performer, it's really a shame to my mind. But look, I am nitpicking here. This is not for me. These songs are nice songs. They're well-written, well-produced. Any modern fan of pop music is going to find a lot to like here. I love the concept of swirling different genres all together. I think that's what culture's about. You know, I've always been critical of the idea of cultural appropriation because that's what culture is, especially pop culture. You take things from different cultures, you make them your own, you recontextualize them, and you create something new. That's how rock and roll was created, right? You combine country and R&B. I mean, this could be the root of something new. The more we can celebrate the melting pot, generally the happier I am. So, you know, not my thing, but still gets a thumbs up number.
I would say for me that not the word pretentious comes to mind, but the word idiosyncratic, and that, you know, we again.
Yeah, but my point is if you're idiosyncratic and you don't quite pull off what you intend, you come off as pretentious. And that's how it sounds to me.
Yeah, perhaps. I just like
go ahead and disagree.
Again, having, you know, we listened to Renaissance for the purpose of this back in 2022. And I mean, even going back, I guess Lemonade was the album before 2022. She had a gulf between, I think, Lemonade in 16 and Renaissance in 2022. There was a little bit of space where she was raising kids and doing whatever, probably beating the shit out of Jay-Z in an elevator. I don't know. I don't know what these people do with their
life. Was she beating him up?
No, it was Solange was, but it's like they might have had some, that was somewhere.
Solange beat up Jay-Z?
Or harangued him in an elevator for essentially stepping out.
I don't follow these stories. Okay.
When Daddy Lessons came out on that album, I was like, oh Jesus. I certainly hope that this isn't like where we, like the needle doesn't land once it's done spinning. We're going to get more country songs. I mean, my own personal taste is that, you know, country should be buried in a ditch and lit a fire. And then just the earth should be salted so nothing can ever grow back there again.
It's modern. Let's say modern country, dude.
All right, whatever. I can't listen to any of it. There's only like three genres. I was going to say two. There's three genres I could do without life. I don't need a single shred of. I don't need folk music. I don't need country. I don't need fucking doo-wop, honestly. I'm not saying
you're
terrible.
It is no wonder you love shit like Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, because you have no soul.
Emerson, Lake, and Palmer is the most soulful music there is. You got to be
kidding.
Those
are real people playing real music, even if you don't like it.
Works Part 1, Pirates, is an incredible song co-written by Pete.
You want to talk pretentious? Yeah, no surprise you like pretentious music. You like art rock, dude. So you think, you know, Tales from Topographical Oceans is music for a romantic Friday night.
Four songs. Jesus. Incredible.
Exactly.
I have gotten laid exactly zero times. Could be. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you'd be so lucky to last that long.
So it's a taste thing with this music, because I honestly can't go for a single word of it. I mean, I listen to it. I understand. Everything you say is true. Actually, you said it way better than I could, or at least as perfect as I perfectly could. The idea that her building music is an exercise in production and songwriting and tone and creation and syncopation and recombination. Oh, like you say, the very best of pop music. If it's, you know, black Delta blues guitarists being listened to by British church-going music lesson-taking guitarists in the mid or early 1960s, and it's infecting Jeff Beck and Clapton and Keith Richards to make their own version of rock and roll just a few years later. That's the essence of how you build
music.
It was
before that, but okay.
All right, you get the point. Is that you get the ideas, like that's how you make some great art. And I mean, again, people can complain if they want. They could sit there and say this is a I mean, I get it. And you could make a point for that. But it's like, honestly, what Beyonce is doing here is that in one moment, it is honest to God country music without any pretension. And then there are some, it's like some of it has a trap beat. Some of it has the sort of multi-part harmony, two or three singers. Like Blackbird has a lot of singers behind it. She plucked these people out of demi-obscurity. And, you know, I was looking at the social media of these other girls that she brought up, and they're like, all they're doing is talking about, oh my God, I can't believe I'm on this album with Beyonce. Such is the position she has as a kingmaker. And, you know, I mean, we'll get to that in segments to come. But it's like, you know, for me, the idea that this as a taste thing was completely out of my hands. It slipped instantly. And I listened to as much of it as I could. I just don't know if I could appreciate it aside from the technical aspects of it. Because the sound of country music is just, it's just grating. It's an idiom that's got nothing to do with me, irrespective of its quality as a great American art form, as a great blankety blank art form, period. It's just not something I can engage with.
Jolene. Why do you think, I mean, let's assume this album, it's getting good reviews, right?
Yeah, very good reviews, yeah.
So it's going to sell a zillion copies. It's going to be number one whenever the charts come out next week. You know, it's going to be one of the best-selling albums of the year. I think we could all confirm that. So why is this album going to be a hit? You know, why? Tell me why.
You know, it's interesting because I have a lot of, I have the word beehive written here in my notes a lot. And it made me think, like, the difference between the runaway fucking high-speed drag race steamroller that Taylor Swift has been on with her own, you know, the Swifties is one fan base of a magnitude and a size that's one thing. And Beyonce's beehive is different. And you could say it's like, well, maybe one is broader and the other is deeper. I don't know. I'm bullshitting here. But the idea is like, you know, the Beehive makes this thing popular because there's enough people to create a, you know, a nuclear TNT detonation the moment it drops. So when Texas Hold'em came out, it's all anyone can talk about. And it was a big draft for that sort of thing coming out. So, you know, the fan base, they can rationalize what Beyonce sells to her. They can turn it into a short-lived way of life or a long-lived way of life. But it certainly is a sensation in the immediate. You know, you only need to look at social media at the moment. YouTube comments, look at the depth of the fanaticism. You know, young people are taking leave of their senses and they're trying to engage with country music, if you ask me. It is a temporary sort of like fever, the way people, when they get in a glossolalia and they speak tongues in a church because they're taken over by the spirit of the Lord in like a Pentecostal.
You don't think there's one young kid, Beyonce fan, or young or old person in their 20s or 30s or even our age, who listens to this and then hears, you know, these demi-famous, as you say, black country stars, and that leads them down a path, and they become a country fan. You don't think one person's going to become a country fan?
I absolutely believe that. No, it's like not even that. I do believe that. That could definitely happen. But what I also, what's really telling to see is a lot of black people on social media, so-called black Twitter, or if it's TikTok, if it's YouTube comments, there's a lot of black people who are saying, it's like, you know what I've wanted to do? Is because I grew up with, much like Beyonce, is like, I grew up with country music, but I felt alienated from it. Like, this isn't something that I felt welcomed into because the fucking Nashville structure has been so orthodox for so long that this is something that's like, all I want to do is validate my memories in 2003 and 2004 of a family gathering where this stuff played in the background. I just want to sort of admit it into the record as like a valid cultural memory of black experience in America. Cultural music belongs to us as well, because thus far people have been told. I mean,
And Darius Rucker wasn't enough to validate
it. One guy thrown at the into the maw of country.
He did all right. He did all right in the country.
Oh, I mean, look, Darius Rucker's got more money than Croesus. That's fine. Hey, yeah. But here's the other thing. I think also to, like you say, you want to talk about the underpin of this, is that like the Beatles towards the sort of as the end and Zeppelin towards the last two albums. You know, there's a thing about legendary acts who get the freedom to do what they want in terms of the sound. They're getting, she gets to track down this idea. I think you put it correctly in terms of the syncretic idea of Michael Jackson, Prince, of these people who could experiment and find new things and just create new albums based on their influences, based on what they wanted these things to sound like. You know, and I mean, Prince resonates a lot with me in terms of somebody who created music that just sounds like so many different things over the years. But the competency was constant, where whether he was making shitty albums with an acronym or, you know, a weird symbol in the 90s that people forget, it's like there is certainly a literacy with music that this guy was like, you know, he too was a polymath. And, you know, Beyonce, like, you can say that is the underpin for the popularity, is that the music has to be good enough in the first place to sort of, like, for us, to substantiate the fanaticism, to substantiate the sort of cult size of it. And at least I'm glad to say the music is of a quality where I don't question those things.
Beyonce would have to release a real pile of horse shit for it not to be enthusiastically embraced. In fact, the return of
Bruno Part 2.
I would argue, okay, I would argue that if she literally released an album that is horseshit pressed into CD form, I know people don't buy CDs anymore, or the sound of, you know, someone vomiting after eating horseshit, it would still be enthusiastically embraced. It would just be a few years later that in retrospect, that was Beyonce fucking up. You know, I'm trying to think of an example of artists who've released really bad records, but because they were big names, okay, a non-musical example. Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Everyone now talks about it's the worst Star Wars movie, it's terrible, you know, throw Jar Jar off a cliff, it made no sense, blah, blah, blah. Yes, but if you recall, when it came out, people were saying it was pretty good. People were saying it was better than Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, you know, like...
Of course they were.
PBS had a show called The Power of Myth with George Lucas.
But the point is, people were so excited for Star Wars, the first Star Wars movie in like 18 or like 15 years, that they were going to love whatever piece of garbage, you know, Lucas pushed our way. But after, you know, after the excitement winds down, we realize that wasn't so good. So no matter what it is, they're going to love it because it's Beyonce. But I'm not saying this is a pile of horse shit. Far from it. You know, to reiterate what I said before and what you said, it's just Beyonce knows how to make a hit record. It's not just that she has the talent. It's not just that she has the star power. It's not just that she has the look. It's that, like Prince, like Michael Jackson.
She's got the, you know, the not delectation. Including
the creepy stuff.
The delectation.
Not like the Beatles, like to an extent Bob Dylan. I don't want to throw Dylan in there. It's she knows how to take everything, put it together, and make it into something that is not just unique, that is not just entertaining, but that will sell. Will sell and will get attention. So, yeah, you know, and then also this, she is, she's courting a little controversy. We talked about that. One thing I didn't say that I do like about it is I like the cover. The cover is a very consciously, she's holding an American flag. She's wearing the sash and everything. Like she's a beauty queen or rodeo queen or whatever the thing is. She is very much saying this culture, you know, this is something in the realm of politics these days. I'm very frustrated that the American iconography, the American flag, seems to be.
I think it's the Texas flag more than anything else. If you want to be broad about it.
Well, she's holding the American flag.
All right, yeah, but her costume, the leather is the okay. The very broad
well,
fine. Palette.
All right, well, still, okay. So the Texas flag belongs to Black Texans too.
Yeah,
this is my thing. I don't like how the American flag seems to be owned by right wingers right now. I mean, I think they're anti-American, so that especially offends me. So I like it when anyone who is not, you know, glomming on to a hateful, you know, racial grievance fueled structure. I like it when anyone pushes back like, no, patriotism doesn't belong to you. Culture doesn't belong to you. General culture doesn't belong to you. It belongs to all of us. So I like that iconography. She's courting controversy in a way that I find smart, that a way that I find inspiring. And, you know, good for her. And she's Beyonce. She's, you know, she wouldn't have lasted this long if she weren't tough, if she weren't able to weather this kind of controversy. And it's mild controversy. But, you know, she knows how to turn it to her advantage. So, you know, that'll get you attention. And then, you know, you pay attention to her. You listen to the song. It's hard to resist. A lot of radio stations wouldn't play Texas Hold'em because they're like, we don't play Beyonce. We're a country station. Yeah, whatever. Nonetheless, it is the number one country song. She is the only female R&B solo star ever. The only female solo star ever to have number one hits on both the R&B charts and the country charts, singles charts.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Think back to your childhood in El Paso. Would you have liked this when you were a kid in Texas?
I stayed in a motel one night in El Paso, and it was really scary.
The old Texas town of El Paso? Is that the one you're talking
about? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, it's taste the old El Paso, taste the old Southwest, taste the old El Paso, taste the very best. No, I was driving, I was road tripping, I was driving late at night. It was like lightning in the sky. I felt really desolate. If I had broken down, I would have been murdered, and this motel appeared, and thank God.
Wow, it's like a noir movie.
Right. And the guy, well, not quite, because the guy in the office behind the counter was watching Monday Night Raw and laughing his ass off. That's my big memory.
Yeah.
Like I get it. A lot of pro wrestling's funny, but man, he was like literally giggling his motherfucking ass off.
Big Quiz watching thing host, whoever that guy was.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's my memory of El Paso. All right. Would I know? You know, we've said this is too girly for me to like when I was a kid, and frankly, probably too black. You know, I've never, in terms of music, my tastes, I've always said, are very white. I mean, I don't deny their black influence, but, you know, on the surface, they're very white. There's no universe in which I'm a huge Beyonce fan. So, yeah, this never would have done a whole lot for me.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think unfortunately, the most boring part of picking this topic in terms of discussing is the fact that, you know, the aversion I have to country, and that it's only the forbearance I have as a cultural critic, whatever that might mean today, that gives me the ability to speak about art that I don't necessarily plug into. But as a kid, I just would have had no use for it. This would have been like the shit-kicking music, which is just like the toxic gas spilling out of Three Mile Island. You know, and Michael Douglas and Jane Fonda trying to turn the reactor off before it kills everybody. I would definitely not have been nearly charmed in any remotely feasible way that, you know, like I can sort of feel like now I understand where this comes from and what it's about. But no, it certainly would not have meant anything to me as a kid.
You're tuned into KNTRY Radio, Texas, home of the real deal.
Bill, is there any way in which this album, the coming of this album, that the horse that Beyoncé is riding backwards on the cover?
Oh, that's true.
One of the horsemen of the apocalypse. Is there some idiot is going to find some symbology somewhere that, like, riding backwards on a horse while holding a flag is written about as being a sign of the apocalypse?
Comes a horseman. Yeah, that's true.
And they're gonna apply numbers to the letters in Beyoncé, and it's going to equal 666 or something.
It's going to equal Gigi Allen is what it's going to equal. You're
obsessed with Gigi Allen, man.
Who couldn't be at this point, you know?
Who couldn't be, yeah.
Okay. I think it's revelatory that Taylor Swift and Beyoncé now, like, I'm not just trying to say the music industry is two people, but it's kind of just two people at the moment.
I don't know, it's like, they're like 80% of it.
Let's be fair here. Yeah, the gross national product, that's like the Monsanto of music, is coming out of two places right now. You could, you know, and the fact that, but here's the thing, the fact that both of them are in such control of their instrument, if you want to call it that pretentious sort of phrasing of this sort of thing, that Taylor Swift and Beyoncé are on top of the art and the business simultaneously, they get to call a shot like this, you know. And I was going to say, it's not quite fair, because I think Taylor Swift artistically isn't taking the veers that Beyoncé does. I think Beyoncé is vastly redefining with each of these albums, making more personal things that are in fact different trips through music and tonality and whatnot. And I think Taylor Swift gets deeper into her lane and has absolutely mastered her diary confessional. You know, she has endeared herself to her fan base by essentially identifying and re-identifying and redoubling on identifying with who they are. And they feel really like they're a sister, an older sister of sorts with her. Beyoncé is more of like a lighthouse. There's just something about she, you know, pops up here. The light's coming from this source. The light's coming from that source. And she veers around. The last album's influence is all that sort of Chicago queer house music was so variant from this. It was so weird. And Lemonade was so different from this. And so I think, you know, the health, the fact that the two people at the top of the food chain, while in fact they are glomming up so much of the thing, is probably not healthy, because there's just not a lot of room for all the, you know, the people at the bottom of it. The fact is that they each are doing their own thing, and that Beyoncé is going into this lane. What is she, 42 years old? 43 years old or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah, she's born in 80 or 81.
Yeah.
Keep talking. I'm going to find out.
Yeah, that at this age is that she's using every single bit of slack or cordage to her and all this power to go down these idiosyncratic avenues. That is not a sign of the apocalypse at all. Like, if she was just sitting back here, you know, paying a bunch of people to write soundalikes of things that you heard of 7 years ago, maybe that'd be way more gross. I mean, granted, she has a lot of people paying. She's paying a lot of music, paying a lot of money to people to write music for her, because she has a gigantic team of human beings who are helping to put her art out. But they're abetting this very singular vision, which is kind of unlike anything that, you know, somebody in her position is putting out.
Right. No, this is not the apocalypse. And, you know, perhaps, and I'm sorry I didn't say this earlier, because I was, you know, saying what I don't like about it more than what I do like about it. The mixing of genres, the polymath elements, cross genre, cross cultures within Texas, within the United States, I think is very healthy, you know. And like I say, I'm suspicious of criticisms of cultural appropriation, because I think that when you put culture out there to be consumed, you are putting it out there to be appropriated, more 9 times out of 10. So by, you know, being a champion for that process and being a practitioner of that process at a very high level, I think it makes Beyoncé an engine for uniting us in a certain sense. So I think that is healthy. I think, you know, in a perfect world, there is no racial element to any musical genre. And look, we've made progress. Like, decades and decades ago, the Billboard literally had the race charts or urban charts, you know, things that were almost explicitly music labeled in racial terms. And yes, we still have some of that. These radio stations that say we won't play Beyoncé because we're a country station, I think, are betraying some of that. Frankly, I think they could have come up with with logical reasons why they wouldn't play Beyonce that don't aren't just, we don't play Beyonce, which is a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We don't want to say the real problem we have with Beyonce. So I think this could be an engine for positive change, especially when someone as powerful as Beyonce is doing it.
Hey, Miss Honeybee, it's Dolly B. You know that hussy with the good hair you sang about? Reminded me of someone I knew back when.
All right, Noah, let's bring this thing home. Let's talk about both jealousy and the Flonian scale. But let's begin first with envy. Is there anything that inspires the feeling of jealousy inside of you?
Yeah, a few things. You know, I like elements of it, but as I said, I think it comes off as pretentious. I think she shoots for some lyrical depth that she does not reach. I said that about
her daddy said shoot. So yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah, American Requiem. She's trying to be deep. She's not. So I don't like when people talk about someone being deep and they're not deep, because it makes me feel like no one appreciates my depths. There was a thing I read about this album on Billboard that was talking about all the allusions and references, and there are a lot in the album, but they called out how the last song on the album interpolates lyrics from the first song in the album. Like, that was innovative. And like, Jesus, that happens all the damn time. So I don't like this when people get praised for doing something that doesn't strike me as praiseworthy, because it makes me...
It's cultural impermanence.
I can't believe I'm comparing myself to Beyonce as an artist, but like, you know what I mean? Like, no one appreciates what I do. Also, I like every R&B hip hop person, there's so much bragging, and they have so much boastfulness and lack of self-consciousness with pumping themselves up. And I find it hard to have that conspicuous confidence. So I'm jealous of that. I'm jealous of this, you know, I don't like what she did to Jolene, but I'm jealous that she had the metaphorical balls to do it.
And the boss signed off on it too, no less, you know?
I mean, I don't know. Dolly Parton strikes me as a pretty laid back person. Yeah. I imagine Dolly Parton might have gone, well, I don't like the lyrics, but you know, she's a nice person, so why not? You know?
Yeah, apparently Dolly Parton.
Or you know, I mean, look, Beyonce has a beautiful voice, so she could say, I hate the lyrics, but I love that sound anyway.
I thought, unless I'm mistaken, Dolly said something along the lines of, the way And I Will Love You, which was obviously upsold by Whitney,
I hate Whitney Houston's version. Like, I think it's just horseshit.
I think she said something like, I wish somebody could do the same thing for Jolene, but she knew it was a tougher sell. And so she might finally, you know, as Dolly Parton herself is, I think she's in her ninth decade now. She's in her 80s or something like that. She's an old lady.
She in her 80s? All right, keep going.
Definitely. Anyway. Okay. Yeah, so the jealousy in my case is of the Beehive. You know, this is a reprise of episode 229, to be specific, which was on July 30 of 2022, which when we talked about Renaissance, as I like to pronounce it. You know, there's the interface of us. We have more in common with this massive bulwark. Of the people, the Beehive, who were engaging with this massive bulwark of pop culture. I have no purchase upon which to scale on a slippery outer surface. I want in. I want to get it. I don't get it. I wish the enthusiasm. I mean, I could want these things. I'm saying this is what I'm looking at is the very real female lived in black experience of people who were expressing joy. I love watching this exhibition, and it's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't get it. I'm looking at the thing you're looking at, and you're getting this thing and saying, oh my God, this fulfills so many different parts of my life, where I'm going to go out and buy boots and tassels, and I'm going to buy a hat, and I'm going to change my way of life, and we're going to play a little costume for a couple of weeks or months or years or whoever. And it's like, man, you know, I don't get it. And it's like, but the thing is, it's also country music on top of everything else. So it's like, perhaps I could if I could be bothered to give a fuck, but I'm sort of on the outside, and I guess I'll just live with it. It's all right.
By the way, Dolly Parton is 78.
All right, she's knocking on the door. All right, so then what about the scale, Noah? The serpentine lizard scales that we call the Filonian scale, the XYZ axis of things that we rate on the show, callously.
Actually, hold up, sorry. Dolly Parton is exactly 12 days younger than my mom. I never noticed that.
How about that, huh?
How about that? Exactly 12 days younger than my mom. Okay.
Your mom's from Pigeon Forge. People don't know that.
Okay. I wonder if my mom's ever been to Tennessee. Maybe. She's been a lot of places. All right. So, yeah, you know, okay. So where does this chart on the XYZ axis of our former topics? I started with Renaissance, right? I don't remember what I said about Renaissance. I didn't listen to the episode, probably a lot of the same stuff, but my point of view now is this is more enjoyable than Renaissance and better than Renaissance and more interesting than Renaissance. So I'm going to say this is Renaissance times. And I'm like, what's something that I gave a very slight thumbs up to, you know, just a little better than Renaissance, right? But that still has a musical and recontextualizing element. So I'm saying Renaissance times, Planet of the Bass. Remember that?
Planet of the Bass, yeah. Remember that as if it was so long ago. Yes, I do.
So the those innocent days. So Renaissance times, Planet of the Bass plus 0.581.
Okay. Well, you know, that changes things, and I'm going to have to bring
it. It really does.
I have a team of respectable horn-rimmed computation scientists with flat tops going off in a lab somewhere in Houston, and they're going to go over this and see what they get of your numbers.
Whip out their T-squares, their graphing calculators.
But for me personally, as people like to say, actually, I can't find a better comp with this than Renaissance, and I'm boring about this. I just feel like...
You are boring, yeah.
The one thing I can think of, hey, you're talking to my wife. I really appreciate. Leave this off record, please. But you know, Beyonce is in a class of her own when it comes to the show, and she will probably make an appearance again in the near future. All right, everybody, I think that gets to the end of another show. Once again, somehow we did it. We triumphed.
Somehow
we triumphed over
against the odds.
We triumphed over advantage, and we created a TV show.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
we triumphed over privilege and advantage somehow to make a shitty podcast that hardly anyone listens to.
We pulled victory from the jaws of victory, and
yes, we pulled mild satisfaction from the jaws of extreme victory.
Past episodes are to be found, Passive Voice, on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google Play. Tweet to us at Noah and Bill Show, and write to us at Noah and Bill Don't Get It at gmail.com. Reviews.
Is anyone tweeting to us? I haven't.
Twitter. I mean, you know, the post.
So why do we say that?
You know, like John Arminio always like retweets the episodes. I'm always glad that he does. He puts it
he
up.
He writes about us on Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook. And well, you don't do Twitter, but John always like actually listens and resynthesizes the preceding episode and puts it on Twitter. And then, believe it or not, I think John's retweets get more traffic from his follows. You know, John's yeah, that's like
well, God bless him.
No,
God
John is a more careful, studied, you know,
God bless him. I'm serious.
I really appreciate it. He does great podcasting himself, and he's also a great cultural. He's an eater of great cultural matter. On top of that, so I am on Twitter itself at Liam Scurry, YouTube.com/AMCaesar. It's also Insta and Blue Sky and wherever you want to get a person. But again, no one seems to care. Anyway, no. Where can people find you?
I'm trying Instagram again, my friend, at the Noah Tarno.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm using my posted, travel
there
adventures.
Were photos of Minneapolis on Insta.
Yes, I was in Minneapolis, which is nice. I love that city. It's good to be back there. So that's where you can find my nonsense. But my non-nonsense is at bigquizthing.com, my company, America's finest source for corporate and private live trivia events, nationwide, worldwide, in-person, virtual, hybrid. Spring's getting busy. Spring's happening, my friend. Lots of stuff. Booking for the summer. Booking a lot of bar mitzvahs. I have a meeting tomorrow about another bar mitzvah happening soon. Those are fun.
A couple of brisses, too.
I've never done a bris. Although I am committed now to doing my niece. My niece's birthday is in May, and she's doing a party at a escape room place. You know, one of these places you go, and she wants me to also do a quiz. So I'm like, I think that's a little much.
That's a yarmulke on a yarmulke.
But we figured it out, so it's gonna be really fun. Me and a whole bunch of 11-year-old girls. That'll be the big bris thing.
Sure.
No, we're not having a bris for an 11-year-old child.
No, but I'm
11-year-old
saying,
female child.
Just saying, put it in the bank for the future. The big bris thing.
I did a 1-year-old's birthday party once, but I've not done a bris per se. Nor have I acted as a moyle at a bris.
According to moyle, as the playing cards say.
That's another thank deep you. Gap. How many bris? I've been to two of my cousin's brises, my nephew's bris, and my bris. So I've been to, I think, 4 brises.
And mine, too. Remember, anyway, when I was 40, I had a re-bris.
I was at your bris. I had
a re-bris at 40. It was good.
I did your bris. I hosted your bris.
You needed two men for that, Jeff.
How'd we get on this topic?
Oh, boy.
Anyway, just go to bigquizthing.com and pay me money, okay? Just do that, please. Do me a favor. Thank you.
All right, everybody. So until the next episode, we talk about the third album of the cycle, which is most likely Beyoncé's recontextualizing of Black culture prank phone call albums of the early 1990s.
We don't get it.
An American Caesar Enterprises production 2024.